We live in a society of laws. Why do you think I took you to all those police academy movies? For fun? Well, I didn't hear anybody laughing, did you? Except at that guy who made sound effects. Hog, hog. Where was I?
Anyway, Police Academy was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
My name's Sean Collier. I'm here with Mother, and a week later, the only name I can remember is Mother. Did any of them?
What did we watch?
Mother and Whistler.
What did we watch last week?
Speakers.
Thank you.
And let me acknowledge, well, Camila Adams.
Yes.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Hi.
Let me acknowledge, the world is clearly on Robin's side on this one. Like, all of the feedback I've received so far is, what are you talking about? That movie is amazing. Camila, I don't know about you.
I have no idea. Like, nobody's come at me. Nobody has added me on the interwebs or anything to, you know, back me into a corner about my feelings about Sneakers. But I mean, you know, again, I didn't say it was bad. We didn't say we did not like it. It was just, it's fine. It's okay.
It was a 62 from me and a 53 from Camila. Those are both north of bad.
Right. Yeah.
I think a lot of people have it as they're like, this is the great underappreciated movie that no one knows how good it is. And right. Anytime, don't say that. It's taken as a bit of an affront.
I still think it's a great underappreciated movie, and a lot of people don't know how great it is.
Yeah.
You stand by that, Robin.
I will.
You know what did not miss out on any cultural attention is Police Academy. A veritable phenomenon. I saw the original once for an entirely separate podcast about 7 years ago, and somehow that was my only exposure to Police Academy until that point or since.
Well, you weren't even born yet when this was out, weren't you? Were you?
Just barely.
No, I think it's for 84, right?
It is. It's March of 84.
And you're February of 85, no?
Right.
Oh my God. Like, it's just now dawning on me. You are old. You are younger than my younger sister, than my baby sister. And that's just.
Isn't that truly the worst feeling? So my baby brother is turning 30 on Sunday, and like, I can't. Like, so when you hear this podcast, my baby brother will be 30 years old.
Wow.
That bothers me on its own level. But then I think about how many friends I have in their 20s.
Right.
My brother just had a birthday, and I was like, wait, is he finally turning 30? No, 32. I just skipped over. I was at his 30th birthday party, but it's the same thing. I can't, like, process that my brother is also in his 30s.
Right. Yeah.
How is he allowed to be?
Yeah, exactly. It's like my little sister's out there doing adult things and whatnot. She's got two kids, and I'm still just like, you're not 40. Yeah, like, she'll be 40. She'll be 40 next year. But it's just like, what? There's no
that
way.
Right.
I feel like the math is off. You're 12 still.
Meanwhile,
you're 16, she's 12.
Right.
Meanwhile, I'm coming from what has been legitimately a joy during quarantine. A friend and occasional coworker of mine, Amanda, started an album club over Zoom, like a book club, but talking about albums. And I was like, yeah, that sounds great. Not knowing that I was about to become the token old guy in album club. And they're all like 23 to 27. And I am just like, the old man that remembers CDs. It's
well, at least you're not
from the oldest to the youngest. And
at least you're not the old man who remembers 8-tracks in that group.
Yeah, that would be too much. Hi, Shelby. Shelby started listening to the podcast.
Hi.
From Album Club. And Shelby tonight was like, you're only 35? Legitimately was like, I thought you were in your 40s. Like,
you have gray hair.
It's your hair. That's it.
Anyway.
So you've only seen you just saw the first one.
I've only seen the one Police Academy.
You haven't experienced the other 37.
What were your Robin and Camila, what was your life experience?
Same. I've seen bits and pieces of it, like on the television, but I've never sat through the entire thing. And in fact, when I was sat down to watch the beginning of it, because there's always been like the little question in the back of my head about these movies, like, how is this misfit group of people in the police academy anyway? And then the title credits or like the opening explains it, like what happens. It's like, oh, okay, that makes sense now.
a premise that is literally better than how our own society does policing.
Exactly.
Like, the absurd premise here is like they decided that anyone can join and it can just be all kinds of people, and I'm like, that would be better.
Right.
That would
be seems better, about so. That's not what we were doing. I know.
Mm-hmm. Like Camila, these have been on television around me. I have definitely never sat down and sat through one. And it is possible I've never seen a frame of this original film. I remember nothing from it. One quick question. So I did zero research. I watched it. I didn't even have my phone because I was painting my nails. And then I was busy at work today and didn't have any time to, dilly-dally about what is the deal with Police Academy. So I hope you have facts.
Oh, yeah, I have facts. Okay, I don't know if they're going to answer your questions, but I have facts.
One quick question is, was there a cartoon series?
Yes.
Okay. I think that I saw a decent amount of the cartoon series.
Really?
So like it was a couple of the characters, I was like, I can imagine you as a cartoon.
It was that era of the 80s where anything that was a big enough hit could become a cartoon, regardless of how appropriate the source material was. This and RoboCop, two R-rated movies for good reason, had like 5 years between this is an adults only property and now it's on Saturday mornings. Yay.
Yeah.
I also had no idea that this was rated R and deserved to be. Mm-hmm. That was stunning to me.
Well, to take one of the facts, this is in the lengthy series, this is the only R-rated movie.
That makes sense. This was
like conceived and delivered as an adult comedy, and after that they were like, and we're gonna make this for everyone because it's a thing now,
because it is like, this is a kid's movie that has rape jokes in it.
Oh god.
Well, here we can quickly get through the recap, and I mean quickly. Somebody tell me to go. The police academy decides to admit all recruits regardless of qualifications or fitness. Hijinks ensue.
Great. 7 seconds.
What else would you say? Like, there's no drive. Like, we set that up and then some wacky shit happens for an hour and a half. That's it.
Yeah, the basic thing that I like come to the conclusion of like the big old movie trope of Steve Guttenberg was like, there's a guy who doesn't want to do a thing and makes fun of the thing and tries to get out of the thing, but then halfway through he realizes he loves the thing and wants to do everything he can to stay in it.
That is such a generous, kind, just, you're giving them so much credit.
I know, right?
Wow.
Because, yeah, like, there's a few scenes in the first half where you could be like, yeah, that's what this movie's about. This, like, it's about Gutenberg trying to get kicked out. And it's like, no, it's not. Like, there are a few scenes where he does that, but then it's just, we're in the police academy, let's see what happens.
Right, yeah. You're right. Wackiness ensues. That's basically it. Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could give a rundown of the characters, but a lot of them are...
Do they matter?
They don't. Some of them get introduced and forgotten for long periods of time, like the clumsy guy.
Yeah, like he just kind of fades into the background, and there's like the whole thing where the shootout is happening and stuff, and he's like in disguise? And just kind of like you see him in the background kind of floating around.
I definitely didn't remember him because he had not featured in the plot at all in a while.
Right.
And there's so many other, like, they truly were throwing characters at the wall and seeing what sticks. And also some of the characters' characterization amounts to, he's fat.
Right. Yes.
He's fat and he has a girl's name.
Right. Yes, this checked all the boxes of the 80s comedies where, you know, we've got homophobia, we've got racism, we've got sexism, we've got sexual harassment, we've got, you know, just all of the isms that we can throw in there and make it funny.
The amount of casual racism in this movie, and some of it is presented as, aren't these the bad guys? They're casually racist.
Right.
But only some of it.
Right. Like, there are the two instances where, and pulling out some real deep fucking racist slurs. Like,
y'all, I've literally never heard anyone right, say.
Exactly. What motherfucker was saying this shit in 84? Like, come on. Like, you no got one. Somebody, and somebody saw this movie, and this movie got somebody killed in 1984, I am sure, because somebody tried it and failed.
Just quick aside about somebody trying it at a movie theater. At one point when I lived in South Africa, I was like, talk to me about Lethal Weapon 2. If you'll recall, the bad guys are apartheid South Africans. And my white friend who grew up in South Africa was like, yeah, I got beat up really badly in the parking lot after that movie. There were some South Africans who were upset.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Well, more on racism and homophobia in a bit, but let's I want to say
I understand that looking at anything from the 80s from a 2020 yes. perspective, right. yada yada yada. I know in some ways this is folly. In other ways, this is gross.
Right.
Like, I just don't want to watch this.
Yeah.
Now I feel bad because, like, the next thing I was going to say was, like, I don't hate the movie.
Okay.
I mean, listen. you can not hate the movie. It's,
right.
It's fine. Because, I mean, I'm not, for as many cringeworthy moments as I had through this, and yeah. as many times as I was like, the fuck? Just, like, shocked. Yeah. It's still, I was like, you know, there were also moments where, like, I did chuckle. I did laugh out loud. And I could also see sort of how Steve Guttenberg got to be popular. Was he popular outside of these movies?
Kinda.
Let's save the Steve Guttenberg of it all for after the facts. Right. I have things to say.
All right.
You can kind of see it. Yeah, anyway. Police Academy released March 22nd, 1984, the sixth number one movie of that year. It won its opening weekend with $8.5 million. The only other new release was Racing with the Moon, a drama with a young Sean Penn and an even younger Nicolas Cage. That opened in seventh with $1.8 million. Police Academy won the next two weekends, barely dipped at all the following week, earned $8 million, fended off competition from new releases Greystroke and Romancing the Stone. Four new releases the following week, all underperformed. Police Academy won its third weekend with $7.4 million. Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter, that's the one that I still think we should watch, finally dethroned Police Academy in weekend four, but then Police Academy went back to number one and won the two weekends after that. It was still in number one in its sixth weekend. The movie that finally took it out for good would be Breakin', our old friend Breakin'. Though 16 Candles also debuted that weekend, finishing second. So Police Academy dropped, I think, from first to fourth in its seventh weekend, remained in the top 10 for a staggering 13 weeks, only falling because it was that blockbuster-soaked summer of 1984. It would have hung around longer than that. Made $81.1 million total, sixth overall for 1984. And the top five are Beverly Hills Cop, Ghostbusters, Temple of Doom, Gremlins, and Karate Kid. So this was a giant hit. Police Academy outgrossed Footloose, Romancing the Stone, Star Trek III, Splash, and Purple Rain. None wow. of those made enough money as Police Academy.
Why?
Yeah, I mean, look, we'll get into it. There are some movies where I'm like, yeah, sure, this hit. And I'm like, this hit that big?
Right.
Really?
It's mind-boggling. I don't get it.
Yeah. I kind of thought that we were going to come into this and you were going to say, like, this wasn't that big of a hit. They made seven of them because they were cheap.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I thought it was going to be like an Underworld situation where it's like there was enough of a dedicated fan base that they kept making them and everybody else could ignore them. But at least for this first one, it was a genuine cultural phenomenon.
Oh, it continued. We will save some of the details on the sequels because most of them are on our list, so we could well be back here.
Right.
To date,
and Lord help us,
seven Police Academy movies. The first five all went to number one.
Wow.
Even the sixth one, 1989's Police Academy City Under Siege, debuted in second and only missed the top spot by like $500,000. The last film in the series, Mission to Moscow, came out in 1994. It was basically direct to video. But all six of those, well, five of them were number one. The sixth was just a hair away. They were all big easy hits.
I'm surprised they never tried to reboot this.
Right? I was just thinking, I was like, now listen, now watch, in 2021 there's gonna be an announcement that they're gonna
I feel like cops are a little toxic right now, which might spare us, but
I mean, they've been trying for 17 years. Like, the first hints of it were in 2003, and it's cycled through some scripts and some producers. As recently as 18, Steve Guttenberg was like, we're doing another one, and everybody's coming back. But
yeah, there is an alternate reality where Ryan Reynolds plays the Mahoney? New recruit, and Steve Guttenberg is running the academy now.
What's funny is I was thinking that Steve Guttenberg was 1984's Paul Rudd.
I think that is very kind and very generous once again.
And not to say that there was somebody that he was reminding me of, and Paul Rudd is the only thing that kept coming back to mind. Yeah, it's not to say he's like as good as Paul Rudd. And yes, it is very generous and very kind, but it just like kind of that it feels they're in the same area code.
I mean, I thought of Ryan Reynolds for, I think, the same reasons. Like, right. I did actually find him genuinely charming and funny and handsome in this movie. Well, let's save that for after the facts.
Critical response, of course, has not been as kind. This movie, the original, is the Rotten Tomatoes high watermark, 54%. The next two go 30 and 44%, respectively. The following four films, all at zero. It is hard to get a zero.
Wow. Right, as discussed before.
A four consecutive movie zero streak. A few of those are very, like, only have 11 or 12 reviews, but still, yikes. It's tough.
Yikes.
Couple of fun facts. Only three cast members appear in all seven films. Try to guess.
Guttenberg? Neither
of those.
Really? Who did you say, Robin?
I said Bubba Smith.
What about the cranky...
G.W. Bailey.
Who is that? I don't know anybody's name. Like, he's the guy who's trying to get him thrown out.
That's him.
Nope. What? It's Michael Winslow Jones, the soundtrack guy.
Right.
Tackleberry, the military guy.
Right.
Why? Who cares?
And
he had a name?
And Commandant Lassard, the main authority.
The guy who gets
figure.
A blowjob under the podium?
Yes.
Punky Brewster's dad?
That's what Mary Beth recognized. Mary Beth was like, I feel like that's Punky Brewster's dad.
Oh my God. Thank you.
That's all my notes really are, is just like me calling out all the different people that I recognized and didn't know was in this movie.
Finally, a brief word on the director, just because he's not going to come up again. Let's acknowledge this was kind of the feature breakthrough for Hugh Wilson, who was previously best known as the creator of WKRP in Cincinnati. A very influential and well-regarded sitcom, and he had a long career.
The main guy is in some of the sequels, right?
From WKRP?
Johnny Fever.
Yes. But Hugh Wilson had a good career. He directed Guarding Tess. He directed The First Wives Club, Blast from the Past.
Yay.
That Dudley Do-Right movie.
I like all four of those movies.
Yeah. I really like Blast from the Past, which
me
is
too.
So,
what I feel, what immediately where my head went when pandemic started.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He had a good run. Passed in 2018. So and this was his big break. What I would say, as we discuss more of the many flaws, like, I think my score is going to drop here. my argument for Police Academy is this is what happens when dumb people learn comedy pretty well. Because a lot of this is dumb. Some of it is troublingly dumb. And fundamentally, like, there's no through line. There's no, you know, it's a, like I said in the recap, it basically has no plot. But a lot of the beats are very effective. Mm. Like, the way that the hooks bit, that she has the tiny little voice, and the entire movie you're waiting for her to yell loudly and she doesn't, it's really satisfying. That works.
Right.
You've got to work pretty hard to convincingly set up a reason in your movie for the bad guy to get his head all the way up a horse's butt. But when they got to it, I was like, yeah, they set it up. They did not have to labor that.
Did you guys watch it on Peacock? Because I don't.
I sure did.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know what I was doing. I totally missed that.
Maybe you were getting a soda. Maybe. I was like, do you want me to rewind? His head went up a horse's ass. And I was like, I'm going to pass.
I know this is one of the, you know, low level sex crimes, but just the setup and payoff. Where Guttenberg is looking in the shower and the bad guy catches him and gets rid of him. And then the bad guy looks in the shower and immediately gets caught.
Right.
If we put aside the fact that that's a sex crime, they execute their jokes very well.
I did laugh out loud at that.
I did also laugh at that. I seriously thought you were going to talk about the, you know, blowjobs under the podium.
Yeah. I'm like, I mean, is it really like that? Like with are men really like that? Like you just, you're not going to look. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It costs nothing to be like, excuse me, there is a person under here.
Right.
I do not get that that's the recurring bit, because it's like, as much as I can almost say, all right, it's funny to watch a guy try to keep his composure when he's a stuffed shirt and he's as much as that
is hilarious.
Yes. But then it's like, why is that the callback? Why is I don't. Yeah. And apparently the runner through the whole series, I saw somewhere, the runner through the whole series is the gay bar. Apparently in every movie, someone ends up
serious?
At the gay bar. And it's so that's what I mean. It's dumb people that know how to do comedy.
Right.
I am going to disagree with you there.
Please.
No, I guess that my objection to the whole, like, knowing how to do comedy, like formulaically making this happen, is that there are formulaic ways to make comic characters. And what they do instead is say, hey, look at this person who's different for a reason. Right? Or like, why is the guy recklessly endangering everyone's life? Tackleberry is just shooting things at people constantly.
That was his introduction. I thought that was pretty funny. But yeah, you're right. I don't know. It's just like,
I think we're both right. I think that Sean is right that there are things where they do a good setup and a good payoff. I completely agree that it is satisfying when Hooks finally speaks with her whole voice. And I do also, I find that performance chef's kiss.
Like, yeah.
Her, that voice is hilarious.
Everything that she does with that character, like, bless her soul. Like, I don't know if, like, if
I went and looked her up. That's like the one thing that I did look up was what else has this woman done? Because she's so funny in this movie and not a lot.
That's surprising, especially considering that she wasn't in all of the other ones. Like, does she at least come back for the second one?
She was in five of them.
Oh, okay. So she's
okay. She grew standards, but not for a while.
Right. Yeah. But she was like probably pretty heavily typecast at that point.
It is a throwback in all of the bad and all of. And some of the good ways. On the one hand, yes, man, does it hit a lot of, like, ugh, notes. On the other hand, you don't see too many shoe polish gags anymore. That's refreshing.
He deserved the shoe sign gag because, like, who puts your whole mouth on a fucking megaphone like that? That's not how you use a megaphone.
And you wouldn't think that Michael Winslow could be the best thing about a movie, and yet here we are. Like, he's so good at sound effects, and every time it works.
And yes, so not only are his sound effects great and delightful, I do think that those gags are well deployed.
Yeah.
Like the squeaky shoe one, for example, is just
that gorgeous. One was yes, that was I feel like I don't know, like the video game one. I'm like, okay, now it's time to talk about his mental health at this point. Because I get all the like the whole thing that he was like his whole introduction and the police whatever when he was arrested in the police station, all that stuff, and then I really liked how he kept adding things onto his name. That was, I found that hilarious. And like, even when he's just like shaving and all that, but like,
oh, that's so funny.
The whole like the video game thing, that was just it seemed a little out of place. And
I want a dark, serious prequel about how Sound Effects Guy in Police Academy ended up the way that he is.
Yes. Yes.
Maybe got like splashed by chemicals and he has a legit superpower.
He's from the future. You saw him in Spaceballs. He's here to.
Spaceballs take place a long time ago.
Probably.
Okay.
In a galaxy far away.
Yeah. I don't know if that transferred over to parody.
We should acknowledge that Steve Guttenberg is the former co-star of our friend and former co-host Aaron Kleiber. They were in a movie. I think it ended up being called If It Ain't Broke, Break It. That ended up on ABC Family. I think. Aaron, sorry if I got all of that wrong. But Aaron did a movie with Steve Guttenberg and said he was genuine and nice and took time to, you know, hang out and get lunch and chat and give advice. And he seems like a very nice guy. And in this movie, he does seem like a star. He doesn't. Not like you're watching. You're not. You know, you're not watching Tom Hanks, but you're like, this guy seems like Yeah, he's a mid-level comedy leading man, sure.
So I have this theory. I think people our age or younger, in their mid-30s, who have seen the Stonecutters episode of The Simpsons, think that Steve Guttenberg is less than he actually is because of the infamous lyric,
"Who makes Steve Guttenberg a star? We do. We do."
I remember as a youth seeing that episode and being like, well, that's not fair, because one of the movies that I almost put forward for our listeners' podcaster's choice episode was Short Circuit.
Yeah.
One of my favorite movies as a kid. Truly a movie that I love in my heart. Speaking of problematic, like, yikes. But Steve Guttenberg, very handsome and charming in that movie. And I thought he's the weakest link in Three Men and a Baby, but yeah, he's still good.
I forgot. I just looked at his IMDb and I forgot that he was in Home for the Holidays, my favorite Thanksgiving film.
Right? So I also forgot that until just now.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about how I haven't watched that movie in years and I'm going to this Thanksgiving. All the more reason to.
Absolutely. And yeah, he's kind of, for me, he's kind of forgettable. You know, like Three Men and a Baby, if I were hard pressed, like before this, like an hour ago, if somebody were to be like, who are all three men? I'd be like, Ted Danson, Tom Selleck, and
Rick
Moranis? I don't remember.
He's the weakest of the three men.
Right, yeah.
But he's not an Aaron Taylor Johnson of the 80s. Let's put it that way.
Ooh. Yes.
Exactly.
Golden Globe winner Aaron Taylor Johnson.
He beat Mahershala Ali. Like, that is so ridiculous. Like, the fact that Aaron Taylor Johnson won a Golden Globe is already fucking hilarious.
All right, back into it. Would you ride down the river in a photo hut? Because I sure would.
Yeah, and also, like, pranks, gags turned into mostly, it's basically like attempted murder.
I have a question. Okay, so this is purposefully not set in a specific city. Did you, in your brain, imagine a city that it was in?
I legitimately thought we were in Chicago. Like, I thought that was an established fact.
I don't think I thought about it. I think maybe Detroit was kind of like lingering in my brain.
My operating theory became St. Louis because at some point Steve Guttenberg wears a Cardinals shirt.
Oh.
And we have not even addressed tiny baby Kim Cattrall.
Yes.
Both times I've seen this, I'm like, oh, it's very young Kim Cattrall, and she looks great and doesn't have a whole lot to do. But hey, thanks for coming.
Yeah, it was a little shocker for me to see her. I had no idea she was in these movies, and this was my whole thing. And
is she in any other ones? I think she gave up.
So Steve Guttenberg is not in all of them.
Yeah, that also was surprising to me. Which one did he skip?
Oh, he might have hung around for three or four and then checked out.
Wow.
He is definitely not in five of them, and it might be less than that. And yes, Kim Cattrall, 2 years before Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, I forgot she was in that too. I always just go to Mannequin as her first.
Me too.
She just did the one.
I feel like Mannequin and Sex and the City are the two good ways of casting Kim Cattrall. Like, she has to be a fake person who is literally performing everything that they say and do. Or a fake person animated by magic.
Literally performing everything they say or do.
I want to get into, like, who would be better here, but it's such an underwritten role. Like, it's so that there's a legitimate love interest.
Yeah.
But also, like, he teases her and she's like, you're teasing me. I don't like this. And then it's like two scenes later, bygones?
Yeah.
She's into it?
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, it was almost a sexual assault when they first meet, first meeting, like, show me your thighs. And two scenes later, she's like, hey, you like my outfit?
Exactly. Show some self-respect.
And by the way, thighs specifically, like, that is... Is this an 80s thing, like, that you would specifically, like, call out not legs or butt, but
have,
like,
you seen the shorts that were sported in the 80s by both men and women?
That's true.
They were very thigh specific. So.
I'd say bring it back. I'm into legs.
Well, if you take nothing else away from this episode, take that endorsement.
I'd like to give a shout out to the guy who played the police officer or detective or whomever who got Steve Guttenberg into the police academy. That is Ted Ross, who was the lion, the cowardly lion in The Wiz. And that's...
Oh!
all, and that I spent most of the movie singing the lion songs to myself while I was watching it.
What a mustache.
Right?
I mean, right? I know we live in a very mustache, over-mustached era today, but that no one was impressive.
I love a good mustache.
Robin, into mustaches and legs. That's what we're going
lot.
Over here.
We're learning Sorry a lot.
I'm horny on Maine today.
Well, let's rate it. I'm afraid that I went way too high. Let's find out by making me go last. Let's start with Camila.
40.
I'm also Robin. 40. How often does that happen?
I know, never.
I was shamed down to a 55. I kind of like it. Wow. I'm sorry.
That's fine. This is so... you are who it was made for.
That's true.
That is very true. We land at a 45, which feels right.
Listen, I laughed out loud. It's short. Yeah. It's just also bad.
Frequently bad. Yeah. I will groan loudly if we land on one of the sequels, because if this is the high point, what could they contain? But nevertheless. And two, the bingo card. Well, we're going to cross off title card info dump. I didn't see that coming.
I know, right?
Loaded.
I was very excited when it happened.
Anything else?
Was there a pickup truck? I feel like there should have been a pickup truck. There was a pickup truck in this film. I don't recall one specifically, but...
I need to do a better job of specifically watching for the things that are in the bingo.
Yeah, I forgot to look for a pickup truck.
I'm glad there wasn't an on-screen POTUS, because he just would have gotten a blowjob at the podium like that. Where that gag would have gone. Yeah, I think we're just crossing off title card info dump.
Yeah.
And the lack of the pickup is keeping me away from a bingo. So
me too.
It'll be another. Well, we'll get into this mess again. And this time I'm picking four Friday the 13th. That makes it time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Oh, let me just get Fat Man out of the way. As promised last week, the Mel Gibson Santa movie. Look, it never would have been, like, great. It would not have been your new holiday fave. But it would have been, like, a North of Bad little curiosity, you know, sure, put that on AMC at 11 p.m. on December 23rd. It would have been that, were it not for the fact that Mel Gibson did not get the joke. Like,
surprise.
Oh, no.
I'm not even talking about him as a personage, like putting all that aside for a minute. It's a very dry comedy, but everyone else gets that, especially Walton Goggins. Walton Goggins is perfect and absolutely gets the joke. And Mel Gibson thinks he's resurrecting his career yet again. Like, he plays it so serious, no humor, does not know how to make this work. I eventually just started listing people in my mind that should have played the... Kurt Russell would have been great.
Oh, yeah.
Keanu Reeves, yes, absolutely. That would have worked out. The dream is Nicolas Cage. If Nicolas Cage were in this movie, it's almost a classic. You can still watch it. It's amusing that it exists. It's not the worst thing I've ever seen, but man, Mel, ruining everything he touches.
How did he get away with that? Like, how does the director not be like, hey, Mel,
would you confront Mel Gibson at this point?
He's just like, yeah, it's fine. That's totally fine. That's a great take.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, you do you, Mel. Whatever you're bringing, let's go with that. I'm trying to come up with something I recommend. There's lots of things I liked. I'm now watching so many damn movies in a week that it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, so it has screener season. Is that happening?
No one can tell.
Okay.
There, like, packages are starting to arrive, I think. I haven't popped over to the office where I technically don't work to check recently. But I'm starting to get some emails and getting some that are like, so do you want us to send you stuff? Because it's a weird year. And I'm like, still yes, that's a joy.
Why would you say no to that?
Right, exactly. Yeah,
I guess if it was a more dramatic version of my situation and you're like, the place where I work is 100 miles away. I've been working from home for 6 months. I don't want all of this coming to my apartment, you know. But I don't know. We're certainly in, here's some prestige stuff. I could talk about Ammonite. Ammonite is good. It just suffers in comparison to Portrait of a Lady on Fire. No one but film nerds care. I'll go back. I rewatched Candyman, and boy, Candyman gets better every time I see it.
It's so good. It's,
every performance is perfect. It's legitimately scary, and it feels like no other horror movie of that or any era. It's such a powerful thing. I know some people are like, I didn't get it, and it's like, just watch it two more times.
Who are you these people?
Right. How do you not get it? That's legit terrifying.
Yeah.
I don't know if I told you guys the story of when I saw it in the theater originally. It was like, I had gone, this is like one of the few horror movies my mom actually went to the theater and watched with us. All three of us went, my mom, sister, and I. And it was like basically kind of an empty theater when we went to go see it. And we were like sat like, you know, like middle row-ish, you know, like the perfect spot, whatever. Like, I forget specifically which part it was, but it may have been like when Candyman first actually appears in the film. When he's Candyman, and we all got so fucking scared that we moved all the way to the back with the walls up against us, so as to not get anybody to sneak up on.
I love that. Good idea.
So that's my recommendation for the week, Candyman, the new one coming sometime.
Wait, you saw the new one?
No.
Oh,
okay. I recommend the old one, and the new one certainly will be here soon. Yeah. The new one, by the way, to weigh in on the Twitter controversy of the day, now part of a growing trend among horror movies, because today they announced that that Scream 5 will be titled Scream.
I don't get it. Can we pause for 1 second?
Yeah.
Just go upstairs. He has been very noisily unwrapping something.
I'm sorry. I just realized. I was like, why am I doing this? I'm sorry.
No, leave that in.
And he keeps looking at me like, oops, I'm making more creaky noises. I will leave that in. Okay.
Yeah, like,
that's dumb.
It's so dumb.
I mean, I guess it's just allowed now that Halloween 2018 set it up and Candyman is doing it, and now Scream is doing it.
But all right, fine. Why would they do
think
like
about the spreadsheets?
And plus,
that's
like,
why I was just gonna say that's why they're doing it, because it only matters to people with spreadsheets, it doesn't matter to regular folks. But Camila,
but why? Like, why? So it's not going to be a Scream, it's not going to be Scream 5. It's just, what are they calling it? Like, it's going to be, it's Scream?
Scream.
Scream. The same as the other title.
You know what? They can go fuck themselves.
Yes. I don't know why it makes me so angry, but it does.
I am furious.
Yes. Thank you. I'm so glad we're on the same angry page about this.
I care, but only a little bit. Only because, like, the push was to call it, was to make just the S a 5.
Yeah.
And now it has a new title. And as one of the This Had Oscar Buzz hosts said on Twitter, I'm just calling it 5 Cream. But it's because of all the fucking Freddy's and Jason's that you think if you call it Scream 5, people are going to be like, yeah, it's Friday the 13th, 19. I'm not going. But
like you're not fooling anybody. We all know it's the 5th Scream movie. What are we... And anyway, the 4th one does. It's a trilogy in my mind. I'll probably watch it. I'll probably hate it, but it's always going to be just 1, 2, and 3. 4 doesn't exist to me.
I watched the 4th one, and it was in one ear and right out the other. Right. Like,
and considering how much I love the trilogy, that's weird. Like, that I don't even hate it. That it's just like, yeah, there was another one.
I don't even really remember Scream 3 particularly well, but like, Screams 1 and 2 are both great. I mean, the first one in particular is like one of the best movies ever.
Right.
So
Scream 3 is the one that canonically pulls the Scream series into the Kevin Smith universe, because Jay and Silent Bob walk by.
Oh, yes. Yes. Jenny fucking McCarthy. So any hoozles. I got to watch 2. I watched Jingle Jangle on Netflix, the Christmas film? Is that what it's called?
I don't know anything about it.
All right. Jingle Jangle, A Christmas Journey. And it's a Christmas film on Netflix right now, and this got Felicia Rashad and Forest Whitaker, and it's a lovely cast. It's, you know, basically it's a lovely black tale of Christmas, and but it's set, like, Forest Whitaker is like this he's a toy maker, but he's got magic-ish powers and stuff, and so, like, everything, his toys are all, like, mystical and magical and all that stuff, and somebody Key, not Peele, I always forget his name, Key is the bad guy who steals
Michael Key.
Yeah, thank you. He steals his designs and his book and everything, and steals all of his stuff away, and, like, so, and ruins his life, and then so he needs to, like, basically reconnect eventually with his daughter and his granddaughter and all this stuff, and it's just, like, a really sweet tale, and it's a musical. Yeah, it's a musical too, and
oh, what? Does Forest Whitaker sing?
He does, and it's it's like he's not belting it out, but he's able to carry a tune. Like, I didn't, and I'm all this stuff, I'm sitting there, I'm like, can Forest Whitaker sing? I didn't know. I had no idea. And he does a little dancing also. So it's very cute. It's very, I think it was my first Christmas movie this season. And Kaj, like, she couldn't care less about it for the most part. But there is a song that the little 8-year-old girl sings, and that's what stopped her in her tracks. Like, she's, like, bustling around, like, she's running around doing her thing, and then the little girl starts singing, and Kaj stops and stares, and she is just mesmerized. Like, the whole number, that was her thing, and then she went about her business. Yeah. And
I love that part of children.
And I also found out today when I watched the Go-Go's documentary, Kaj also likes the Go-Go's. So
who doesn't?
Right. Yeah. Should have seen her dance. She was ripping it up. Oh. Ripping it up when we got the beat came on. So
that sounds really painfully cute.
It was adorbs. So I would suggest those two. Jingle Jangle is on Netflix, and the Go-Go's documentary, I recorded it off of, like, I think Showtime, like, 2 months ago, and I just finally watched it today, so it's probably on demand somewhere.
I think it's a Showtime original. It's supposed to be really good. I saw the Go-Go's on a split tour with the B-52s.
Nice.
And the whole thing was great. I still am like, the B-52s should be playing last. Like, I know, but we got to beat the... Yes.
What?
Yes.
I agree. Really? I agree.
Really?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I feel like maybe I don't understand the, like, the depth of the B-52s catalog. Like, to me, it's like Rock Lobster and Love Shack.
Oh, no, it's very deep and long. Like, there are 4 or 5 hit B-52 albums from, like, late 70s into mid 90s.
All right. So for me, I did not watch anything new, but my new to me things, one was also a Forest Whitaker film, The Color of Money. And I have wanted to watch this forever because Paul Newman won an Oscar for it. But what finally got me to do it, other than it being on streaming, was that Colin was watching the Apple Plus or Apple TV Plus show Ted Lasso. And one of the characters said something like, everybody knows the best Martin Scorsese movie is The Color of Money. And he asked me to explain that joke to him. And I was like, I think it means that character's an idiot, but I haven't seen the movie. So let me watch it. After watching the movie, I genuinely don't know exactly what that joke meant. I feel like that movie is often remembered as, like, not very good, and, like, Paul Newman just won an Oscar for it because it was time. And the latter may be true, but I think it is actually good. And it's also, Sean and I had a conversation about Tom Cruise, because on the aforementioned podcast that we love, This Had Oscar Buzz, in a recent episode about Far and Away, they sort of posit that Tom Cruise will either A, win an Oscar in his 70s, or B, die doing a stunt. And we were sort of talking through those possibilities, and Sean is on team, I can't imagine Tom Cruise winning an Oscar for acting. He's trying. This was when he was a baby. But he's trying so hard in Color of Money, and I'm reminded that he is capable of doing it.
It would have to be like his sad speech in Magnolia when his dad is dying. Something like that, where that's the whole role, where it's an 8-minute, 1 or 2 scene role when he's 72. Maybe I can see it happening.
It will be in his 70s, and it will be in supporting. And those are the things I believe.
Yeah.
It also had a line in it, which I will be repeating in improv lessons for the rest of my life, which is be yourself on purpose.
I like
which
it.
Which is something Paul Newman says to Tom Cruise, teaching him how to hustle pool. But so that was one thing. And then the other thing, I downloaded Peacock so that I could watch Police Academy. And I read when Disney Plus came out a year ago, I remember reading that like streaming services really care about what you stream first.
Interesting. Oh,
okay. Yeah. In my brain, I was like, so I have to watch something other than Police Academy first.
No.
I then forgot to do that. But after I watched Police Academy, I was like, I gotta make up for it somehow. And I started scrolling through what's available on Peacock. And one of the things I saw was the 1982 film Missing, which was nominated for Best Picture, which I've never seen. And so I watched it, and it was another reminder of why my ridiculous quest to watch Oscar-nominated movies is worthwhile. That movie is great, and I absolutely would never have seen it if I weren't trying to watch Best Picture nominees from the past.
And also, if you didn't have to watch Police Academy on Peacock.
Also that. And thank you, Camila, who was the one who let us know that it was on Peacock, because I also appreciated not spending $4 to watch
Abso-fucking-tively. And I guess I'm kind of safe, because the first thing I watched on Peacock was the Psych 2 movie.
Right.
So.
That's perfect.
My my Peacock redemption was the 1933 Invisible Man.
Oh, okay.
With Claude Rains, which was great.
And I would love to watch that again. I watched that as a kid. Claude Rains.
He's so good. Some of the Universal horror flicks are very dated, and some are probably not as effective, because as effective would be people running out in terror because they had never seen effects before. But so effective even now. Invisible Man is one of those. And Peacock has a big 30s and 40s Universal horror library. I'm liking it so far. It doesn't have the incredible depth of stuff that Netflix or HBO Max does, but it has some very interesting little pockets of stuff. So
also, I think that, you know, it's no Tubi when it comes to the ad breaks being inoffensive, but right, they're pretty good. And I really like this feature where the last hour of the movie is uninterrupted.
Yeah, that's good. Front load them.
Oh, I kind of missed that. I thought that their breaks were
a full hour, but they front load the ad breaks.
I thought their breaks were a little abrupt. Because I think that first ad break was like right in the middle when this dude's wife was on the car. And that was kind of like, what?
Listen, they can't all be Tubi, but this is no Crackle. This is deep nerds conversation, deep streaming nerds conversation. If we have another minute, Wonder Woman 84 going to streaming?
Is it?
Yes, it's going to be on HBO Max Christmas Day.
Whoa.
Get the fuck out.
No. It's happening.
All right. HBO Max.
Right. That's exactly my reaction. Like, part of me wants to be like, oh no, the death at the cinema. And the other part of me is like, I get to like, watch
right,
Wonder Woman
give
on
it,
Christmas
give me,
morning.
Give me. Yes.
You know, I mean, no one is more concerned about the death of the cinema than me. However, it's been a fucking year. And like, all of the shit that got delayed and all of the things that we haven't seen and the stuff that has moved, you know, I guess Pixar's Soul is a big move. I guess Mulan is a big move, but
this is the biggest by a lot.
All of the stuff that we did not get to see, which is not to say there weren't good movies. There were a ton of good movies that came out this year. I'm pumped, you know, for more movies that are coming out this year, but you're right. The fact that I don't think this one blockbuster being a same day streaming and physical release, because it will play in some lonely theater somewhere in Alberta.
Right.
I don't think that's going to kill movie theaters on its own. And it's just fucking nice. It's like the Hamilton thing. Like, not only like you get it a year early and at home because we know you've had a rough time. It's just, you're right. We're going to sit down on Christmas Day and watch that. And that's, I feel better. I feel a weight has been lifted off of my holiday.
Oh my gosh. I mean, like, I, as we'll discuss in our Christmas episodes, I've got my Christmas issues and I can't think of anything I'd rather do than watch Wonder Woman 84 in my bed on Christmas morning.
God, it's going to be a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Like, even if it's bad, I'm going to be just sugar plum fairies.
Right. Because like, I really liked the original one, but I had my problems with the first one, but I still enjoyed it very much.
I mean, I like, that's a movie I can't be objective about. Yeah. There's an episode of You Can't Handle the Truth where me and, frankly, Scarlett talk about it and just kind of go like, she hit people, yay.
Right, yeah, that's what it basically is. But it's Wonder Woman. That's right, kind of where I stand. That's my stance. But it's Wonder Woman.
Well, I don't care that this villain means nothing.
Right, it's Wonder Woman.
Exactly. Here's my question. Now in America, I know that worldwide it's different, but now in America, is she the biggest superhero? Is the most prominent superhero in the cultural consciousness Wonder Woman?
He's still Batman.
Yeah, it's probably still Batman.
Maybe.
But
Spider-Man.
It's not Superman. It's not Superman. No, oh, yeah, it's not Superman. Spider-Man is down the fell down the Avenger tier list.
Spider-Man.
It's Batman or Wonder Woman.
I think it's Batman.
All right, fine.
I like
For
to
now.
Refer to him as Spider-Man.
He's not your accountant.
That's why we say it in the house here. It's always, we want to watch Spider-Man.
Into the Spider-Us. My second favorite physical bit in Police Academy is when that lady does all the somersaults over the fences.
Yeah.
Because my first favorite physical bit is just trying to throw books through a closed window. That's just going to be funny every time. And they just fall. Let's draw a movie.
Hey.
This is probably for the last time in 2020, the full pool, because aww, we've got a selection from our trivia winner coming up, and we've got holiday movies coming up. So this is, I believe, the last.
We'll have a new draw on the 28th. We will drop a normal episode at the end of the year.
Okay. The number is 961. That is... Well, saddle up for a long time and a good time. It's Pulp Fiction. We landed.
Oh, that's interesting.
Pulp Fiction.
Okay. Okay. I can rock with that.
The last movie I saw on the big screen.
At the drive-in.
Yeah,
next
to Sean's car.
I just saw it a couple months ago, so I think I'll still like it.
Let's, ah, fuck.
Let's see if I find a new angle on it.
That's right. This is Tarantino. Ugh. This is going to be...
Where are you about, at on Pulp Fiction?
Talk about racial slurs.
Yes!
Oh, boy.
You know, there are bits and pieces of it that I do really like. I don't hate it. There are a couple of those stories I genuinely forget about. I think like Harvey Keitel, I think I forget about him for the most part. And the only thing that I always think about, obviously, first and foremost, is Samuel Jackson screaming at that kid about, say what? One more time, motherfucker. Or something.
Never not good.
Right.
Never
yeah.
Good.
And, you know, John Travolta, is this what brought him back to everybody's, yeah, to the forefront of everyone's mind?
Yeah. This was his comeback.
Yeah. So there are parts of this movie that I really like, and we'll get into the other stuff.
Yeah.
Where Tarantino's like, now I'm only going to be on screen for 6 minutes. How right. many times can I say the word in those 6 minutes?
Exactly.
Let's find out.
Oh, but I know what'll make it okay. I'll be married to a black woman. Yeah. That makes it better.
Save some for next week. No, hey, legitimately, one of the most iconic and important movies of the past, what, 50 years? Yeah. So great. Glad to be getting it. Here, just so that Robin isn't the only one who had to do this. Mary Beth, don't do that right now. Don't. Yeah, the sound is picking up. Yeah. It's okay, because Robin had to do this to Colin 10 minutes ago.
That's why you guys need a third floor.
Right. All right, Pulp Fiction. Police Academy was released March the 22nd, 1984. What was the number one song in America?
Van Halen, Jump.
Oh, good.
How did you know?
Okay, so I figured it out because this is, you said it was like the one before Breakin'.
Yes.
Right? Oh. So I know what was the number one song in America when I was born. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure, I don't actually know this, but I think that Against All Odds by Phil Collins, the number one song when I was born, ended a long run of Jump.
That's correct.
Nice.
It was Jump by Van Halen. The quickest response
yeah.
ever. I
well
think.
Done. Well played.
I just knew it, kind of.
My favorite, to throw back to a previous episode, Jump is a great song. The best service it's ever done was, you know, I'm worried going into Ready Player One. Like, is this going to be drab or is this going to be fun? And the first thing you hear is the opening chord synth hit in Jump. And I'm like, it's going to be fun. Great.
Yeah, that says a lot about why you thought Ready Player One was good.
That
no,
and the show.
Jump is an amazing song. I'm sorry. That's a great, great
song.
It
is. It's good stuff. R.I.P. Eddie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we'll go out on that sad note. It's a bleak time of year.
The most wonderful time of the year.
When Marge first told me she was going to the police academy, I thought it'd be fun and exciting, you know, like that movie, Spaceballs. But instead, it's been painful and disturbing like that movie, Police Academy.